at NPR.
From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. And I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me. Well, coming up, we're going to have a big check-in with Sullivan County, as New York's DEC says the entire state's at high risk of fire danger and following Governor Hochul's announcement of a temporary burn ban until October 15th. Radio Catskill's Patricio Robayo talks with Sullivan County Fire Coordinator John Hauschild for the latest, because it's also Fire Prevention Week. Also, how's the federal government shutdown affecting public health and social services in the county? Tim Bruno talks to John Little, Commissioner of Health and Family Services for Sullivan County. Both of those Sullivan County check-ins coming up in the second half of the show. Also tonight, Radio Catskill's Genevieve Hartnett was the first to report on the local edition about the $500 million bond Sullivan County is issuing to help with the resort's World Catskills Casino. The New York Focus has additional reporting. Well, coming up, Genevieve Hartnett talks to Chris Bragg, Albany Bureau Chief at New York Focus. We start with some election news tonight, as we're less than a month away from Election Day itself, and Radio Catskills election coverage is now in full swing. And we're starting tonight with a big development in local politics. It may impact what happens in one of the biggest elections next year, because today, New York State Senator Peter Oberacker, Republican from Otsego County, who's currently representing the state's 51st state Senate district, announced that he's running for Congress in New York's 19th district, looking to challenge sitting U.S. Representative Josh Riley, Democrat, in next year's election. Riley won the seat last year against Republican Mark Molinaro in what was one of the most watched and most heavily funded congressional races in the entire country. The 19th is a massive district in New York, stretching from Tompkins County in the west to Columbia County east of the Hudson, and it includes most of Radio Catskill's listening area in New York State. The Times Union reports that Oberacker's official campaign kickoff event happened this morning in his hometown. In this clip from his campaign video, Peter Oberacker is seen starting up a blue Ford tractor.
We need more leaders who remember where they came from.
Not those who show up with just the cameras.
Or treat our farmlands as nothing more than a photo op.
In a statement released today, Maddie Summers, Josh Riley's campaign manager, said, quote, "Albany insider Peter Oberacker has been selling out upstate New York for years," end quote. She went on to accuse Oberacker of being an executive for a big ag monopoly that put small farms out of business. And she added, quote, "If Oberacker buys himself the GOP nomination, we'll gladly compare his record with Josh's next November," end quote. Now, State Senator Peter Oberacker was in Sullivan County late this afternoon to announce his campaign locally. Be listening to Radio Catskill tomorrow morning at 10 for Patricio Robayo's report. Well, next up, we have an update from New York Focus. As I mentioned, it recently reported about the $500 million bond that Sullivan County is issuing to reinvigorate the resort's World Catskills Casino in Monticello. The county is promising investors major gains, but reports found by New York Focus and consultants on the deal say the numbers show decline. Radio Catskill's Genevieve Hartnett, who was also reporting on this deal last month right here on the local edition, spoke with New York Focus Albany Bureau Chief Chris Bragg about what they each have found on this story that may have a major impact on Sullivan County's economy.
So I understand that we are both following the bond issuance and potential deal that is happening with the Resorts World Catskills Casino in Monticello.
Yeah, correct. I read your article a few weeks ago about it, learned a lot from that, and I was sent some more information on some further aspects of it, and so I did a follow-up.
I was reading over your article, and you have the study from Cushman and Wakefield, you have capacity consulting that found the likely drop in revenue costs that particularly the hotel part of the Resorts World Catskills would experience.
Yeah, there's a roughly 1,600-page document that's online. It's on a site called Munios that I think it has a lot of offerings or proposed offerings for bonds that are put out for investors, which has the local development corporation's initial lengthy proposed bond offering to investors. as well as a couple of amendments that have been made more recently. Some of the amendments are at the request of potential investors who are concerned about a default. And so you have all this. And then, yeah, appended at the end is this Cushman and Wakefield study that was prepared for the local development corporation. I think it was basically an appraisal for the LDC to try to figure out how much all these properties were worth and how much should be paid for them. But it does have some information in there that's pretty contradictory to what's in the bond pitch from the LDC itself, as you mentioned, concerning revenue projections.
In any of the reports that you found, were there any people who were saying this would be good for the actual business of the county?
Well, the capacity consulting report from April that predated this whole idea of a bond offering really explicitly said that if there were three new downstate casinos, that was going to decrease revenue for the Sullivan County Casino by up to 76%. So that one was very contradictory to what was in the bond offering. The Cushman and Wakefield one, I really focused on what it said about hotel stays and the fact that it was going to saying that hotel occupancy was actually going to go down if there were new downstate casinos, as opposed to the county's bond offering where it says hotel occupancy is going to see this dramatic spike. It wasn't as strong a language as the other report, but it definitely strongly hinted that casino revenue was going to go down, or was definitely threatened by these new downstate casinos. So the bond offering is the main thing I'm really seeing that says increased revenue. I'm not seeing a ton else that says that.
I reported on this story and end of August into early September. You put this out in the last couple of weeks. The original deal, it was said to go through in September. I knew that there was the delay because of searching for legal counsel on both sides of the transaction. But did you get any other updates, whether from the IDA or the LDC or Genting potentially, of where exactly it is in progress now? Have they secured the legal counsel? Are they working through any other aspects of the transaction before it goes through officially?
Yeah, I think they did secure a legal counsel. It's a big firm that's specializes in this. It's kind of interesting because I believe the legal counsel is being paid for by the LDC, but they're representing the interests of potential bondholders. One expert I talked to indicated that this is not like a normal bond necessarily, where a wide range of people are going to probably be buying this. It's probably one or two big investors that are have an appetite for this kind of risk. And so they want this counsel to look at ways to mitigate their risk. The most recent amendment, which was in mid-September to the bond offering, had some new protections for investors in case of a default. It's certainly a default is something that potential investors are definitely worried about, because again, the entire formula of this is that the non-casino properties, the revenue from those is supposed to be able to pay back the bondholders. So if the revenue goes down, can't pay them back, then there's going to be a default in a huge amount.
Did you have any other questions for me about updates on the story on the ground here in Sullivan County?
Oh, yeah, definitely a bunch. I'm used to covering Albany and the state legislature and the governor and some other counties like in New York City. Most of those places, there's a strong county executive, right? Or a strong executive where you could say, okay, like this person's making the call to do X, Y, and Z. They have a whole agency staff probably that's like experts on X topic that, you know, might know about, for instance, like a high yield municipal bonds. So in Sullivan County, I was trying to figure out who could comment on this issue. From your perspective, who actually is driving these decisions or making these decisions that would be like the person responsible if it all goes south?
The best point of contact was legislator Matt McPhillips, who is the chair of the Economic Development Council, which is also a part of the entire Sullivan County legislature. And he had very optimistic views about it and led the push towards issuing the bond. In terms of getting in touch with the Sullivan County LDC, I originally reached out to the IDA and was able to get the strongest comment from Jennifer Flad, who I saw is also involved in your piece as well, just about the real logistics of the deal. The county created the LDC, which counties will often do that in order to issue these high tax exempt bonds, which will allow projects to benefit from lower borrowing costs and certain tax exemptions. Someone who is certainly pushing back against it quite a bit is legislator Catherine Scott. She has been very, very vocal in support of the Gateway Housing Project, which is a project in Sullivan County towards affordable housing that has been pushed further and further and further back. And she has actually referenced our reporting on this, as well as an airport that the county is trying to build and questioning why the county can move towards these other goals and not towards affordable housing. The county has fallen on economic hard times, and it's a situation many people see as we all have the same goals. We have very, very different ways of going about it.
Interesting. One issue I think underlying all of this is that Empire Resorts, the parent company of the Sullivan County Casino, they have had a lot of financial difficulty the last few years. I think largely because the casinos, the properties they own in that area are not doing particularly well compared to what was expected. And so that company has a $300 million debt that's due in November 2026, which I think is what's really animating this entire buyout. One expert I talked to said that the county could have chosen the path of allowing Empire Resorts to go into bankruptcy instead of doing this $585 million bond issuance that's pretty risky in some ways for the county if there's a default. So do you get any sense that a threat from Empire Resorts to do layoffs if the county didn't do this deal, or would that be likely? Is it even possible that they would have threatened to close down the casino altogether?
So I reached out to Empire Resorts multiple times before the original publishing of the story, and they did not get back to me. I think one of the major goals with maintaining the casino is really bringing tourism back to the region, since there has been such a dip in it after the mid-20th century with a lot of the resorts and the entertainment of the Borscht Belt that really brought a lot of people to the region. The Sullivan County Legislature and the government is really trying to revive the tourism of the county as a way to bring in more revenue. And like you said, the bankruptcy wouldn't necessarily put people out of work, but it might discourage more people from coming all the way to the Catskills in order to gamble, in order to stay at the casino. I found that many of the people who, and much of the appeal of the Monticello Casino is it's a bit of a getaway from the city, and it's being marketed in a similar way that the Catskills was marketed as a tourist destination about 50, 60 years ago, especially in the economic arm of the legislature. That is an important goal for them.
Okay, that makes sense. I know that the IDA had one meeting where this was publicly discussed, but how did you find out that this was even happening? And it seems like there's been a general lack of transparency around the entire thing. There was the one public meeting, but have there been any meetings of the legislature really about it or anything like that?
People certainly know that it's happening because, I mean, if you look at the casino in the scope of the Catskills, it's a massive resort. It really stands out. And when you get off of the Route 17 exit to the casino, it is very different than anything else you see around there. So people have always kind of noticed it there and always thought, like, what is going on with it? So when the little bit of news started to get out, particularly on a lot of Facebook groups, is where a lot of the news started to get disseminated, reporting at the Sullivan County Democrat and the River Reporter, putting out the basic facts of it. It wasn't until our work where it went a little bit further into the actual economics of it. Like I said, it's come up in conversation at a lot of the legislative meetings on Thursdays in Monticello, but there haven't been any public meetings about it. Most of the conversations between the LDC and the IDA and Genting Malaysia have been in private, although the minutes of the meetings are available on the LDC's website.
Okay, I looked as of this morning and don't see that the bonds have actually been issued. Maybe somebody's willing to roll the dice on $585 million, or maybe they're not. We'll see.
Well, Chris, thank you very, very much for talking with me today, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
Okay, thanks so much.
In Liberty, I'm Genevieve Hartnett for Radio Catskill.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
It is The Local Edition. I'm Jason Dolb. Well, coming up, we have an update on fire safety from Sullivan County Fire Coordinator John Hauschild. First, we have a Sullivan County update dealing with the fact that the federal government remains closed amid a bitter impasse on Capitol Hill over competing spending bills. How is the federal government shutdown affecting Sullivan County? This morning on Radio Chatskill, Tim Bruno spoke with John Little, Commissioner of Health and Family Services for Sullivan County. He oversees public health, social services, mental health, and more.
So we actually haven't seen a whole lot impact us immediately from the government shutdown. Our eyes are more on how long this is going to last, because if we get through the end of October without a resolution, the impacts can become pretty significant.
And so what signs are you watching for as the debate continues on Capitol Hill?
What's most interesting, I think, as you follow from a policy perspective, is the push and pull with regard to Medicaid and Medicare. And so a lot of those changes are being discussed, in the national media. And it's something that we're looking very closely at, because there were significant cuts to to Medicaid established in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, potentially 1.6 million essential plan enrollees and 140,000 enrollees in qualified health plans in New York could lose their coverage. So that's something that we know congressional Democrats are trying to put back into the congressional spending legislation. But that's, you know, that it certainly remains to be seen. What we know is coming is changes to the SNAP program, which is currently funded through the month of October, but we have no indication yet on whether or not November benefits will be paid. And we know there is no money in the Home Energy Assistance Program unless there is a continuing resolution or a spending bill passed by the Congress. So we plan for HEAP to start at its normal time on November 1st, but if we don't have a spending bill out of Washington, then that program is going to be on hold as well.
Are those the lines in your budget that are most vulnerable to delayed or frozen funding, the public health and social services?
Yeah, that's what we see. I mean, fortunately, you know, a lot of our work day to day is state and local funded. So, there's no risk that the county public health department or social services is going to be closing our doors anytime soon. It's really where we rely on federal funding to provide benefits that I'm most concerned about and that we're keeping a closest eye on right now.
Some populations are more at risk during these funding gaps or transitions. Who in Sullivan County do you expect could be hardest hit if things don't resolve themselves by perhaps end of month?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think the poorest people are going to be the ones who suffer the strongest impact first. And like I said, that comes from the SNAP program, which again is funded through the month of October, so those benefits are getting paid out for this month. The Home Energy Assistance Program, we were already expecting to see cuts, where we wouldn't be able to provide home energy repairs and clean and tune this year because of funding not being at levels it has been in years past. But right now, there's no funding authorized at all for that program until we have a new federal budget. So that's the one that really concerns me most as we start to head into winter weather.
Thank you, Tim Bruno. Well, finally, tonight, Radio Catskills, Patricio Rubio spoke with Sullivan County Fire Coordinator John Hauschild for this year's Fire Prevention Week, which runs from October 5th through the 11th. This year's theme from the National Fire Protection Association is Charge Into Fire Safety, Lithium-Ion Batteries in Your Home. Campaign focuses on how to safely buy, charge, and dispose of lithium-ion batteries, same kind found in many of our everyday devices. Before diving into that topic, Patricio first asked John to remind listeners that New York State is currently under a temporary burn ban going through October 15th due to dry conditions that have increased the risk of wildfires.
That's correct. Yes, the governor put it in place last Thursday, October 2nd, and goes to the 15th because conditions are very, very dry. And then after that, they're going to reevaluate if they have to extend it.
So let's talk about this week is Fire Prevention Week, and this year's theme is lithium batteries and the dangers they can impose on folks. Just want to talk about why are lithium batteries so dangerous? And lithium batteries are everywhere. They're in my smoke detector, some Christmas decorations, laptops. They're everywhere.
They're all over. Lithium-ion batteries are used in cell phones, laptops, tablets, power tools, electric cars. And then you have the e-microbility ones where you have the e-bikes and the scooters and, hoverboards and stuff like that. So these batteries are out there all over. And they store a large amount of energy, and if they're not used properly, it does pose a threat to people. So what happens with these batteries? These are multiple batteries put together, and sometimes people try to fix them, try to add more batteries to them to give them more power and stuff like that. But people need to know that they should buy or use devices and batteries and charging equipment that is from a certified, qualified testing site, which is the Underwriters Laboratory, UL. And on the back of these batteries and stuff, it will tell you that if it's under Underwriters Laboratory, UL approved, because you can buy cheaper batteries, and that seems to be where the problem is. These batteries heat up, and stuff like that. So, and you have to use the right equipment that comes with it. The manufacturer makes this stuff to meet these standards, and then they alter them by using different charging units and stuff like that. So that's one of the key points, is making sure that the equipment is used properly.
Are there any warning signs or things that folks can look out for to see that that shows damage or can show that it will be dangerous to use this product?
If you drop a battery or you drop your cell phone and stuff like that, it's probably going to be okay. But if the battery is damaged, dented, don't try to fix it. You have to dispose of it. A lot of times too, and I'll get back to your question. People need to avoid overcharging. They think that they have to charge it every night. They have to charge it for, 16, 18 hours. These are a rapid charger, and they charge very fast, and they heat up. A few other things that you should use them in normal room temperature atmospheres. You shouldn't have to, and I know this is going to sound bad, but some people take their phones to bed with them and they charge them, they keep them under their phones and stuff like that. That is very, very dangerous. Same thing with laptops and stuff, because once you cover them up, you're building that heat up longer and longer, and you have the potential of that bursting into flames. Like e-bikes and stuff like that, sometimes when the batteries fail, they'll put off some smoke, and then it'll burst into flames. The smoke is very toxic. So with e-bikes and scooters, they should be charged outside. And if they are charged inside, they should not be near an exit door, because it happens so rapidly that you might not be able to get out. And the smoke is very, very toxic that comes off of these batteries.
And you mentioned disposing of the batteries. You can't just chuck them into the garbage, right?
Correct. You cannot just throw them in every household garbage can. They should be either sent back to the manufacturer, or the manufacturer should have where you can dispose of these. I know there's companies out there, and I can't specifically say one company over another. But if you Google recyclable of lithium ion batteries, these companies will come up, and you can ship them back to them. Or they might even have a drop-off on something like that.
You mentioned smoking from the battery compartment or the battery itself. That could be a telltale sign that something is going wrong. This is, for this sake of this interview, let's say in this scenario, you have an e-bike, it's outside, it's charging, and you notice smoke coming out of the battery compartment. What should you do?
Well, first you should unplug it. Unplug it from the house. Stay away from it. Let it cool down. If it doesn't ignite, if it stops smoking, which it probably won't, it's probably going to ignite. And then you have to deal with it that way. But if it does ignite and burst into flames, you got to call 911. There's situations where people had these charging in their apartments and they moved it out into a hallway because it was smoking, and then it burst into flames in the hallway. It's just unplug the source. If it's inside, like if it's a laptop or tablet or something, it is extremely hot, so you probably could get burned from it. I think people can tell when they charge their cell phones and earbuds and stuff like that, that it does heat up after a while. So that's why it's very important. But if you see it starting to smoke, try to unplug it, and remove it from the building if you can. If not, just evacuate yourself. Don't get caught inside.
I'm curious here. Have you seen an increase of fire calls related to lithium batteries in our area?
So New York City is very big on these. As you probably know, it's all over the media with e-bikes and stuff like that, and apartment buildings and these shops and stuff. We've had a few here in Sullivan County already with e-bikes, earbuds, computers, laptops, and stuff like that. They were contained, so it really wasn't a lot of damage. Unfortunately, one was, in a residence, and, the people had to do some major construction to get it back up to, they couldn't live in it for a while. We are seeing more and more. Because we are seeing more and more out there, they're readily available. But again, I think a lot of these are non-manufactured charging units or not the actual battery for the device.
John, before we go, is there anything else we have not touched on? Do you want our listeners to know about?
Practice fire safety every day. It's not just one week a year. It's very, very important that you have your exit drills in your homes, that you practice fire safety on storing flammable liquids. The lithium ion batteries is huge. Use the proper precautions for that and just be safe. Be safe. If you have any questions, and you see your local fire department, stop by. That could be two things. Stop by and maybe you'd be interested in joining the fire service as well. But practice fire safety every day, not just one week a year.
Yeah, the fire departments are always looking for volunteers. Thank you so much, John. We were talking to John Hochschild, the Sullivan County Fire Coordinator, talking about Fire Prevention Week. And this year's theme is the dangers of lithium batteries. Again, thank you so much for talking to us. I do really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, and have a great day. Enjoy the weather.
In Liberty, I'm Patricio Roballo for Radio Catskill.
Thank you, Patricio. I'm Jason Dolan. That is it for the local edition tonight, but we still have a big news night ahead with Laura Flanders and Friends at 7, followed by Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk, and then at 8, it's the debut of the Janice Adams Show at its new day and time. It's a powerhouse lineup of local hosts having national-level conversations, and tonight, Janice Adams focuses on the importance of historically black colleges and universities and the threats that they face. Again, the Janice Adams Show coming up at 8 tonight. For now, the news continues with The Daily. This is Radio Catskill.
Next time on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we've got tunes by the Voodoo Organist, the Hollywood Jazz Stars, and Juan Esquivel. Plus, there's Private Eye Jazz from Mike Hammer. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music is always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio